So this is a study that we did really with the long-term goal of trying to develop a participatory breeding program for organic tomatoes in the Midwest. But I think it should also have hopefully some value for you when you're thinking about doing variety trials. And it was also just a valuable approach for me as I got started when I came to Purdue to get to know the needs of the growers, the needs of my crops, and where I could really direct my research station or my research program, and getting to know the growers and teaching them about on-farm research and getting more involved in that. So hopefully there'll be some valuable things for you. Okay, so in the Midwest, there's some trends with specialty crop production, like probably most of the rest of the country, areas where you're from, and that we're seeing growth in this local direct market production systems, and then we're also seeing lots of growth in organic production systems. But there's questions about whether the varieties that are out there are going to be the best optimally adapted for growers who are serving local markets or in organic production systems. So most of our varieties have been bred for conventional systems where you have a lot of readily available nutrients. You might have different pest pressure than in organic systems. We don't have really any fresh market breeding programs in the Midwest, at least for tomatoes, what I was looking at in Indiana. So a lot of the breeding is being done in other areas, and breeders often focus on broad adaptability, but we don't know if that's really going to be best adapted to our environment. And then concerns over, you know, a lot of the new varieties that are coming out with good disease resistance are hybrids, but some of the growers that we work with might be interested more in open pollinated varieties where they can save their seeds. So that's why we wanted to delve into this project. And so we wanted to use an approach, participatory varietal development, which is something that was developed more for growers in marginal areas where you have very heterogeneous environments, so different soil types, different conditions, and also where they lack access to a lot of the agrochemical inputs that are important in traditional conventional programs. So there's a lot of benefits with this, in that you can work with growers, they can realize some of the breeding goals that they want to see that would be difficult on their own. There's also benefits that breeders can prioritize local environments and characteristics. They're less expensive than a traditional large-scale breeding program, a little bit more, have some drawbacks as well. And then what you can't see here is that a lot of people are using this approach to breed for organic systems, because they actually have some similarities there, in that you have more heterogeneous environments. People are using different types of fertilizers, different cropping systems. And then they're also valuable for minor crops. So I work with small-scale growers who grow a whole bunch of different vegetables. And at Purdue, we can't have separate breeding programs for each crop. So maybe this type of approach would be beneficial. So participatory varietal development or participatory breeding can encompass a continuum of models, from being very farmer managed, where the farmer has an idea, like one of the growers I'm working with is trying to develop a yellow eggplant, and he's been doing that on his own. I've given him the little advice I know and connected with him with some breeders, to being very researcher managed and just working with growers on farm. And then they can also range in scope, from growers being involved to the initial making crosses and doing the back crossing and everything it takes to get to a new variety, to having growers just participate more at the end with varieties that are almost ready to release, or varieties, perhaps new varieties that are coming out. So there's generally three steps that are involved in this process of trying to initiate participatory varietal development, from really identifying the farmer's needs, selecting suitable material to work with them, and then actually going out and experimenting on farmers' fields, like we were doing here with a wheat project. So we wanted to use this approach again with the long-term goal of developing an organic fresh market tomato breeding program for the Midwest. And as I said, it also has some other benefits in terms of just getting to know the growers' needs and getting some practice, or getting the practice of on-farm research out there. So we decided to use tomatoes. They're a very ideal model crop for this. They're both, you know, one of the most commonly grown crops in these direct market vegetable systems, also one of the most profitable. Organic production has been increasing steadily over the past 10 to 20 years, up to close to 10,000 certified acres in 2011. They're a relatively easy crop to grow. They grow in a range of environment, and most importantly for this participatory breeding aspect is that they're self-pollinated, so highly self-fertile. So if you're going to be doing some selections, it makes it a lot easier, and they have some relatively simple genetics too. So one of the first things we wanted to do was really identify the farmers' needs. So get out, understand our growers, what did they want to, what were their challenges, and what did they want to see in their tomato varieties or in a breeding program. And so we went out and did a lot of informal discussions with growers, like most people do, visited their farms, talked to them, tried to get a handle on, what varieties they're growing, what challenges are they running into. And then we did a larger, more focused survey with a larger group of researchers at Purdue as part of a larger organic project. And so we used a Qualtrics survey, an online survey, using the Market Maker database, which a lot of states have this, where the growers can get involved in this online thing and connect to consumers. And so those resources and names are out there for us to use. And so we sent this survey out to, I think, around 3,000 people, initially growers throughout the U.S., and got about 1,500 responses back. And so as part of the larger project, we wanted to know what were some of the factors that were really limiting adoption of organic farming practices. And then for this project, we wanted to know what are the most desired traits people want to see in their varieties or in a breeding program. We wanted to know what the most significant pests are. And then we wanted to know whether there was a difference between organic and conventional growers and what they were looking for. So some people are saying perhaps we need separate breeding programs for organic or conventional, or maybe the varieties in organic and conventional are just going to be different. So we wanted to get some information on that. So this is some of our results on key traits that people were interested in. For this, we narrowed it down to the Midwestern region. So we had about 300 growers there. And this is kind of on top of each other, but we had organic farmers were both certified and uncertified. And so these are some of the traits. These are the more traits over here that were really key in this process. You can see organic and conventional growers in some ways were pretty similar into what they were interested in, but this yellow highlights areas where we did see significant differences in between the two groups. So you can see flavor is really key. This was something that both organic and conventional growers were very interested in, 79% of organic, 72% of conventional. Disease resistance was also very strong for both grower groups. Interestingly, we found that conventional growers were more concerned about disease resistance than organic growers, which was interesting given that organic growers often have fewer control options. So there's some, have some theories about why that might be. But anyway, so some other things, the appearance of the fruit turned out to be pretty interesting, both for organic and conventional growers, but conventional growers rated were more concerned about crack resistance, color, shape, really the appearance, than organic growers. So they're not quite as concerned with that, but nutritional quality is something that came out as very strong and organic growers were much more concerned with than conventional growers. Weed competitiveness, which is a challenge for most organic growers, comes out in surveys as being very challenging. Didn't turn out to be really strong on either groups, but it's not surprising with tomatoes given that a lot of people plant on black plastic, at least currently. And then some of these other traits like nutrient use efficiency really weren't all that important. So these are some of the results with pathogens. We wanted to know which were the key pathogens, whether organic and conventional growers differed. This is the number of respondents here, the percentage of respondents who identified the disease as a pest. And you can see that organic and conventional growers had a similar rating system for the pests that were most problematic, but the ones, again, highlighted in yellow are statistically different, and some of the conventional growers were actually more concerned than some of these pests than organic growers. But over here, in terms of the percentage of respondents who identified the disease as difficult to control, organic growers found it more problematic to control white mold and root knot nematodes. So there's a lot of great data we learned here just from management and where to direct some of our efforts. And so these foliar pathogens of early blight, late blight, and septoria really stood out at the top of that list. Okay, so the next step in this was we wanted to identify a germplasm that we could use in a breeding program, but also just has a lot of similarities of any variety trial that you might be working on. So we consulted with a lot of organic growers about what they were using. We talked to our local organic seed company to get some of their varieties and tomato breeders. We wanted varieties that people thought were good as well as varieties that just might have some of those beneficial characteristics that we were looking for. And so we selected several heirlooms. We had some early modern open pollinated varieties that had hopefully better disease resistance than some of the heirlooms, but still had some of those possibly strong flavor characteristics, and then we had some hybrids. And then we also included a wild tomato relative with really good disease resistance and a foliar pathogen check. And then we also included some segregating breeding populations that were developed by my colleague John Navazio that had both good disease resistance that's in some of the NC state inbreds out there with some of these early moderns, and also some wild types that we looked at. And so we conducted pretty much a standard variety trial that most of you might be working on. We conducted this on organic land for 2 years at our university farm. We had 22 entries, a randomized complete block design. We didn't use any organic pesticides. We really wanted to have really strong disease pressure so we could figure out which ones really had some good resistance in there. And then we tried to get growers involved as much as possible in these variety trials. We had field days where we went out and walked the varieties with growers and asked them to look at the different traits and tell us what they liked. I also had other growers that just came and visited on their own so we could walk that. And I wish I would have done a better job at quantifying this in a way that could be statistically analyzed. We didn't, but it gave us a lot of good information. So disease incidence was something, of course, we looked at quite a bit. We identified the pathogens that were most problematic at our diagnostic lab. We looked at did area percent leaf defoliation by foliar pathogens, and used that information to develop area under the disease progress curve. And we saw early blight, like our survey shed, was our most problematic pathogen there in the Midwest. And we saw, of course, wide variability in the varieties that we were testing and some of the germplasm. And we found that luckily our breeding populations over here had pretty good disease resistance, and some of the heirlooms were the highest as could be expected. This was something that was really interesting in terms of insects. It wasn't something that we were really focused on and looking at, but I think it comes down to really keeping your mind open when you've got this variety trial out there, a germplasm trial, and really trying to figure out, see what's out there. And so I always tell my grad students when they're designing a project, sometimes it's some weird thing that comes out, which is the real scientific discovery. So always keep your minds open. And so hornworms, if any of you have worked with tomatoes, you've probably had to deal with hornworms in the past. And so these came up in our larger survey. You know, they're always present in tomato fields, not necessarily a problem. They're pretty easy to pull off the plant and squish them. Some people don't like to do that, including myself. So we were pretty excited when we started looking around the field and seeing that there were potentially differences in the susceptibility between these varieties. And so our entomologist on our project, Ian Kaplan, came out and did a systematic assessment in there looking at percent defoliation in September when there was a lot of hornworm susceptibility. And so we did see statistically different among our entries in the susceptibility to hornworms. And so, again, our breeding populations, by surprise, quite luck, seem to have a lower susceptibility there. And so we looked in the literature and in wild types, like the wild type here also had low defoliation, and it could be due to these glandular trichomes and some of the chemicals they're putting out, which also gives you the tomato hands. So yield, just like any variety trial or germplasm screening trial, we did our best to really characterize that really well. We did weekly ratings of that, separated into marketable cull fruit, looked at appearance characteristics, saw, of course, great variability. We had a lot more yield or less yield in 2012 because of a big hailstorm here. And we had the greatest in the hybrids and quite a little variability in our breeding population. So that's something as we move forward we're going to have to focus on. So fruit quality, as I mentioned, was really strong in our survey assessment. So it's something I think as we move forward, and all of you when you're doing variety trials, especially for organic and local food markets, really need to focus on. Fortunately, flavor tends, at least in tomatoes, from what we've read and learned, is one of the most difficult traits to select for because it's very highly subjective. So I'm very glad there's going to be a presentation shortly here that will hopefully help us to learn how to better take some more quantitative assessments there. So we did ourselves, our researchers, our research team did a lot of tasting of the different varieties that we were working with, and the growers worked with us on that, but we didn't do as good a job, I think, as we could. And so in the future, we've been looking into using trained taste panels, but again, I'll be very excited to hear what the speaker has to say about that. And nutritional quality, this is something, again, we didn't really look at in our initial screen, but I think as we move forward, given how the importance that organic growers put on that. And so we've started, I'll be happy, interested to talk to Penelope about this. We found a paper by DeSouce, 1992 in Hort Science, that has a colorimeter to correlate lycopene content in tomatoes, and she's shaking her head. So we might have to try some different techniques and maybe go to the more extensive things there. Okay, so just conclusions and next steps. We know from our survey, I think it's really important if you're going to be, whatever you're working in, to really know what your growers are interested in, you know, their markets, and so to try to focus there. And we found organic growers as well as, I think, conventional growers in the Midwest who are probably marketing more directly, that fruit quality is going to be a really big thing to focus on, and resistance to these foliar pathogens. And I think there's some opportunities perhaps to select for hornworm resistance, which I think people, our growers, are very excited about. We were able to identify some existing varieties that perform really well. We can give that data now, and we think there's quite a bit of value in these breeding populations that we're working with, and so we want to move forward. We've actually started selecting out of these. We're doing some on-farm variety trials now with these populations that are a little bit further along. The growers are looking at those with their favorite varieties. We have 4 locations in Indiana and 1 in Michigan, so I'm really excited to hear Thomas's talk about how to really get some good information out of those. And we're going to be expanding that in the future with some of our colleagues in North Carolina, Janine and others, as we move forward. So that stop there. I just want to thank some of my colleagues at Purdue who are involved in the grower survey, particularly Kevin Gibson, who's in the room. From our germplasm screening trials, John Navazio, Ian Kaplan, the entomologist, and Liz Maynard were involved in that. These are some of the growers that were very key in working with us and helping us to really identify the traits and some varieties that were important. These are some of the tomato breeders we talked to as well to identify germplasm and characteristics. And then the most important part, funding here at the bottom, which was cut off. Grower survey was funded by an OREI project that out of Purdue that was led by Dr. Gibson, and then the screening trial was through some Purdue Ag Research funds. So with that, I'll stop and would be happy to answer any questions.
So we have about 2 or 3 minutes, so questions for Laurie.
Matt. So many tomato varieties. did you discover that they were using a particular metric themselves, among the growers, and there was some of the common thread? I mean, you alluded to some of that flavor nutrition, but I see flavor and that sort of thing. What else might we learn from that?
Oh, geez. Yeah, a lot of it's, you know, availability, organic seed availability is a big factor there. And so they're, you know, concerned about keeping some of those varieties. So whatever the seed companies have available flavor, you know, just what varieties have done well on their farm. And so appearance too, you know, their heirlooms are really popular, but those big gigantic ones are very hard to market and hard to get to market. So they wanted something a little bit smaller there. So any heirlooms that have the good flavor that have those characteristics.
You have mentioned the difference between the organic conventional growers' opinion of disease resistance.
Mm-hmm.
You said it was a little bit surprising. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so the difference between organic and conventional growers and conventional growers were much more concerned about breeding for disease resistance or having varieties that were disease resistant, which was surprising in that you tend to think of, you know, organic growers having less options. And so I like to think it has something to do with soil. I'm a soil scientist by training, and that maybe, you know, disease susceptibility is actually maybe a little bit less in organic systems comparatively. So there's some data out there to support that. We're trying to learn a little bit more about that. But that would be my guess.
Perhaps organic growers are a little more accustomed to crop losses.
Yeah, that would be a case too, that organic growers might be more accustomed to crop losses. Most of the growers we work with plant a little bit heavier, and they're willing to let a little bit more go to that, so that could play a factor as well.
Matthew?
Yeah, this is just a broad comment, because most of the work that we do, sometimes we try to address the needs of farmers, growers, and sometimes we overlook that, you know, the need of consumers also.
Uh-huh.
And it was good to see that flavor, you know, was part of the thing that you're looking at. But when we do those variety trials, we should also, whatever possible, consider the need of the consumer.
So if no more questions, let's thank Laurie once again. I'm really happy with the speakers.